This is the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan. And we are coming to you today on a Wednesday afternoon as the Cubs' five-series win streak comes to an end. They drop two of three in Milwaukee, which leaves the Milwaukee Brewers in first place as we head to an off day on Thursday. Brendan and I will break down these three games in Milwaukee, and then we will preview the upcoming set on the weekend with the St. Louis Cardinals. But let's jump in and recap these games really quickly. On Monday, the Cubs winning 7-2 with a five-run 11th inning. The Brewers leading early with an Eric Kratz home run. Albert Almora would tie things up with a single in the fifth. Jonathan Villar would homer in the bottom of the fifth to give Milwaukee a 2-1 lead. And then it was Jason I Hit Lefties Hayward tying things up in the top of the eighth to score Ben Zobrist. That coming off of Josh Hader. So Jason Hayward playing with all sorts of odds in the last couple weeks, doing some things that if you put them into a simulator, I don't think they'd come out as happening very frequently. But then we would go to extras. Randy Rosario coming up big in this one for the Cubs, allowing the offense to get some more chances. And Anthony Rizzo, who earlier in the game missed a homer by just a few feet foul, kept this one straight. His 11th of the year for Rizzo gave the Cubs a 3-2 lead, which would be the eventual winning run. But Ben Zobrist would add one more with a single. Almora would follow with a single. And then Jason Hayward again with a double to bring in two more insurance runs. Again, the Cubs winning this one 7-2. Anthony Bass would come in and close this one down. On Tuesday, the Brewers winning 4-0. Not a lot to discuss in this one on the offensive front, as the Cubs only muster two hits off of Chase Anderson, who entered the game with a beefy ERA in the mid-fours, but he does pick up his fifth win of the year, going seven innings with one hit, no runs, two walks, and six strikeouts. Tyler Chatwood better command in this one, but sacrifice that for a bit more hard contact. He goes five innings with five hits, four runs, three of them earned, two walks, and five strikeouts. So a good K-to-walk ratio for Chatwood, but the results then worse. Go figure, right? He throws 97 pitches in those five innings. And again, the Cubs, not much on the offensive front. Wilson Contreras with a hit and Addison Russell with a hit, and that was it. They strike out eight times. Only 0-2 with runners in scoring position. It's harder to leave guys in running scoring with. It's harder to leave runners in scoring position, Brendan, when there are no runners. So I guess that's one way to mitigate that issue. The Brewers' runs in this one coming on a pair of two-run doubles for Travis Shaw. And then in the finale today on Wednesday afternoon, 1-0. A somewhat similar story. The Cubs outhit the Brewers 6-4, but cannot push that run across. The lone run coming off of a home run by Lorenzo Cain off of Mike Montgomery, who was stellar again. Six innings, two hits. Again, only that one run allowed, one walk and four strikeouts, and only 79 pitches for Montgomery. He came out when an opportunity presented itself for the offense in the seventh, lifted for a pinch hitter. But another very good outing for Mike Montgomery. So that is 4 of 4, basically, in terms of good outings. 3 of 4 in terms of quality starts. He missed that other one by just an out, going 5 2/3. Chacin picking up the win. You'll remember Brendan talking about him in the offseason as someone he wished the Cubs had targeted. He is now 6-1 with a 3.32 ERA. So I will throw it to you, Brendan, as that's it for my recap. The Cubs didn't score much in these last two games and really for the better part of that first game. So I'll throw it to you. I don't often try to make you sound smart, but you did like Chacin. You did write about why you like Chacin in terms of his repertoire and ability to change his sequencing a little bit. And the Cubs got a little taste of that today as they are not able to do anything against him in six innings with only four hits. And he's put together a good season. So general thoughts. A disappointing series, but, you know, one of three on the road. The Cubs still obviously very heavily in the mix in that top of the NL Central. Still 11 games over 500, and they just won five series in a row, so I find it a little hard to be too upset, but a disappointing series nonetheless, Brendan.
Let's see. June 13th, 2018, Corey says Brendan is smart. You know, you got to savor these compliments, Corey, whenever you dish them out.
Blind squirrel finds a nut, Brendan.
I'm not going to repeat my comments from last time. Mike Montgomery, Corey. I think that's kind of the takeaway from this series. You can pick Hayward and Rizzo as well, but in the grand scheme of things, once Darvish comes back, and you'll have updates for us in this podcast with Darvish, but once Darvish comes back, they're going to have, they're going to have to make a decision. What do we do with Mike Montgomery? He has just under 24 innings now as a starter this year, and he's only given up three runs. Another six-inning stellar performance. He's throwing four pitches. He's showing his changeup once every five pitches, a curveball, a cutter, a two-seamer, a four-seamer. He has the perfect repertoire for a starting pitcher, and he was one reason why I wanted him to get a chance. I don't know. I didn't want an injury to happen, but who knows? It could be kind of a blessing in disguise as the year goes along here. The six-man rotation, Joe Maddon explicitly said a few weeks ago, it's not going to happen. So I don't see that happening unless something changes from now on when Darvish comes back. But I guess my general thoughts here, Corey, is that, one, Mike Montgomery is still extremely encouraging. And two, despite the Cubs not really hitting well, and we're going to get into this in great detail because there's a lot to talk about with the offense. Despite the Cubs not hitting well this week, I still am okay. I still am encouraged with what I see from some of the at-bats. And I know KB has been struggling and Schwarber has been struggling. But overall, I think they're still in a really solid position. And once everything clicks, like, look out.
Yeah, so I think this is a few times now where Montgomery, since he's been in the rotation, has been the, you know, guy you focused on or one of us is focused on. And I think it's good reason, you know, especially in a series where the offense doesn't do much and there wasn't, you know, I don't know that there was like a really standout performance. It's worth mentioning that he continues to do really good work. And as we've talked about, it's important for this team. We don't know exactly what his role will be going forward as things continue to shake out. But regardless, you're seeing a guy develop a really strong string of starts and continue to add length to his game. He was on a really good pace in terms of his pitch count today. And so regardless, you're kind of seeing Montgomery, and we've seen this before, but at least in the context of this season, put himself in a really good position to help this team. So one way or another, that's important, however they decide to use it. And I think that's a good moment to update on Yu Darvish. So on Tuesday afternoon, he throws 31 pitches in a bullpen in Milwaukee, and all reports that went well. They wanted to see how he would feel today. Those reports well. I know, Brendan, you were saying that the next plan is for him to throw a 3-4 inning sim game, and then eventually he'll get probably a rehab start, and we will see what the exact timeline will be. They haven't given us one yet, but they're going to take their time. Darvish has said that. Maddon has said that. And, you know, so I don't know if he'll be back before the All-Star break. I don't know if he'll want to just...
I think he will. I think he'll be back in about 2 weeks. If you think about the timeline here, his next step is a simulated game. So I'm imagining that in like 5 days to a week. Mm-hmm. And then he will rest a little bit more, maybe another 5 days to a week. He'll do that rehab start, and he'll come back again in 5 days to a week. So I can see him coming back towards the end of this month, maybe for a start or two before the All-Star break happens. But I would be shocked. He's on the trajectory to come back well before the All-Star break, I think.
Yeah, so that's good news. Again, you just kind of have to be patient there and hope that, you know, this team is playing well. They're winning, again, aside from this series. But, you know, you just sort of hope that that's kind of like a mid-season acquisition of sorts where the team is already in a good place and hopefully you're inserting a healthy and productive Yu Darvish into a group that's already winning and performing pretty well on most levels, again, aside from, you know, these spurts with the offense. Carl Edwards Jr. also throwing. He's working his way back. again, things good there. But similar situations where it's just about getting these guys through their program here, their rehab, and they should be back and contributing to this team. But I think for the two things I wanted to highlight in this series really were the performances from Rizzo and Hayward on Monday. So I guess a joint player of the series. Neither of them have a particularly great rest of the series, so I think it's only fair that, you know, maybe they share this honor, I guess.
And we're breaking a rule here where we can't go with dual players. So this is a first and hopefully only time you do this here, Corey. We'll only allow it for this one.
Yeah, right. There's very strict rules on this. I'm gonna get chewed out by our legal department here. But you know, Hayward, obviously, I mean, look, he brings in the tying run in a tight situation in the top of the eighth on Monday against Josh Hader. I believe that Josh Hader had allowed two extra base hits to lefties all season, or not an extra base hit, but hits, and Jason Hayward now one of those. So, you know, I think you got to give him credit for that. I believe Jason was 3 for 6 in this game with 3 RBIs. So another solid game for him where he's able to continue this hot stretch of his. And, you know, again, it continues to be worth pointing out. But just for him to be able to lock in on an at bat against one of the toughest relievers in the league and deliver in the clutch like that, definitely something worth celebrating and not, you know, trying not to forget about. He also doubles in that 11th inning to, you know, sort of put that game out of reach and allow Brandon Morrow to sit down in that one. So a really good game on Monday for Jason Hayward. And then Rizzo, you know, obviously he comes close to hitting a home run earlier in that game that would have obviously been big for the Cubs. And then he straightens the one out in the 11th, but they needed that. And obviously it's the only win the Cubs get in this series. But that was, you know, something that we weren't seeing earlier in the year from Rizzo, where the team can sort of sit back and let Papa Tony win him a game. And sometimes, you know, that's what you need from the middle of your order and the guys that your offense is built around, is for them to step up in those situations and win you a ball game on the road. So certainly not the first clutch homer Rizzo has hit in Milwaukee, and I doubt it will be his last. But wanted to definitely highlight those players. Justin Wilson, also a couple of strong scoreless innings in this series. The bullpen, you know, very good as usual. Randy Rosario, as we mentioned, 2 strong innings in that game on Monday that allowed, again, getting through that Brewers order to allow the Cubs to come up in the 11th and eventually win that game. So not a total dud of a series in terms of individual performances, but I think, Brendan, this is a good place to transition here, and I think the trend that I wanted to focus on, because I think it's certainly a big topic amongst Cub fans and everybody that was watching this series, is the offense in general. I think one thing that has come up a lot is the power numbers from this team and sort of the disappearance of power at times from this group. And specifically Chris Bryant, who is in the longest homerless stretch of his career and gets the day off today, you know, simply just because he's not in a good place and Joe was committed to him sort of getting a mental break here. But just your general thoughts on the offense as a whole is, you know, sort of 2 series in a row now where the runs are kind of at a premium. And Chris Bryant, you know, sort of in this this bad stretch.
What was it, about a week ago, the Cubs basically matched their through, what is it, month and a half, 2 month season of offense from 2016, like almost identical numbers from that 2016 run. So
right.
it comes in, it's the ebbs and flows of this season, right? Like right now the Cubs have not performed well over the last week or so offensively. Regardless of that stretch, they're still a top offensive team in the National League. They're number, what is it? I'm looking right now. They're number 2 in the National League in WRC+. This is as of June 13th, so, you know, after today it might be updated. So they're still within where you would expect offensively in the leaderboards. And there's so many ways you can go with this. I think like, first, we can start with KB, right? I guess I'll throw it to you first. Are you, like, worried with KB. Like deep down inside, it's almost impossible, right?
Yeah, and as I was mentioning to you, I do like to bring stuff like this up because I think if you're watching these games and, you know, reading the stuff from the beat writers and everybody, that's something that you're going to notice, that KB has not been hitting well, obviously gets a day off today for that reason. So I like to, you know, make sure that we touch on those things, not from a place of concern, but just trying to, you know, understand what's going on and maybe make heads or tails of it.
So Chris Bryant's power, right? He has 8 homers this year. His expected homer rate, and we actually did this with Kyle Hendricks in the last episode, so it's always fun to go back and see how many of the fly balls these pitchers give up or these hitters hit should be homers in most ballparks. So for Chris Bryant's case, 11 of his he's should have had 11 homers from all the fly balls that he hit. He only has 8, right? So he's basically 3 under from what his expected rate should be. Now, if you look at that over an entire season's trajectory, that's around 25 to 27 homers, give or take a few at-bats. So it is lower than what you would expect from Chris Bryant, but it's not like he's experiencing this massive power outage. And all it takes, we know all it takes is a few games where he has maybe a homer or two in one game, and his ratings and his trajectory is right where it should be. Last year, too, his expected homer rate was 35, and he got screwed. I think he only ended up hitting 29. So I'm not necessarily concerned, too, and I think maybe there would be more concern worthiness if, you know, Bryant was drastically changing something. Let's say he was hitting for far more contact, which he is this year, but just in the last month when he's struggling, his contact rate is a lot worse than his overall yearly rate. It's at 73%. So Bryant's struggling is coinciding with a lack of contact. He's usually around 70 to 80%. So it's not as if he's sacrificing contact for power here. He's just, Corey, simply missing his pitches. And I think once he barrels up on those pitches like he's done in the years past and early on in the season, the power is going to come here. So it's not as if he's like, you know, choking up and trying to put the ball in play and he's sacrificing power. It's not like that for Chris Bryant during the stretch. It's just simply he's missing his pitches.
Yeah, and that was something that we saw with Rizzo earlier in the year, that basically most of his numbers were exactly the same. And actually, I remember looking at this, Brendan, that his barrel rate, I believe, was about 6% lower than his norms from the last few seasons, where we have this Statcast data. 2015, Rizzo's barrel rate, 8, 9, 9.3 in the subsequent years back to 2017. It's up to 6% now. I think it was about 3.5% during that earlier stretch during the year. So
yeah, that's what I'm talking about, too. It's just like, you know, you give these guys a few weeks, and all of a sudden you blink, you look up, and it's like, oh, they're well within their normal ranges. So it's kind of crazy, too, because the season is still technically a little bit young. They're only about a third of the way through. This happens. These guys are going to get right, Corey. They're going to get right.
Yeah, you know, and like you mentioned, the overall numbers for the offense look very strong and have looked strong throughout the year. It just sometimes with this group, the sequencing is not great. And that's, you know, sort of why you see them end up with a lot of guys on base that don't end up scoring. And, you know, they had their chances today, not many of them. But, you know, Tommy La Stella striking out with a couple runners on and one out. And, you know, it just seems like that's how it happens for this team sometimes, that, you know, they can get that double with two outs and nobody on, but they can't do it with no outs and two on. Why that is, I don't know. But, you know, you would have, I mean, no questions asked. You would have liked to see them perform better against Anderson, Guerra, and Chacin, who they faced today. You know, especially Anderson coming into the game with not good numbers. Guerra and Chacin, better numbers and pretty good numbers overall on the year. But, you know, obviously a lackluster performance overall from the offense. But I think that that's just sort of how this group is. It ebbs and flows like that. And as we mentioned, you know, not just with Bryant, there are other guys on this team who do that as well. And, you know, you look at someone like Javi Baez, who, you know, you combine that with what Chris has been doing, and it just, it leaves some bad spots in this order, you know, and for Baez, who was so hot earlier in the year, you know, he is getting really close to hovering around, like, league average offensive numbers, which is sort of crazy with where he was at the beginning of the year. But, yeah, I think that's just sort of how this offense is going to be. And you know, we've talked about this before, that there's, you know, not really a lot that they're going to mix up or anything. So this is the group. And, you know, sometimes we just have to sort of stick with them through these stretches and trust that those overall numbers and the overall talent of this group eventually rounds into form to provide a little bit more consistent offense. But yeah, this series was pretty rough from an offensive perspective, aside from, you know, basically the eighth inning on in Monday's game.
Yeah. Here's the thing too. Chris Bryant struggling when Rizzo's doing well. Rizzo struggled when Chris Bryant was doing well. We've yet to see the two match up. And when that happens, it's inevitable, by the way. When that happens, this team's going to take off. I genuinely believe that. They're going to take off. And if we continue to get strong performances from Javi, from Hayward, if Schwarber, and Schwarber's been doing well throughout the year. He's going through another kind of a low stretch here. But if he continues to just do what he's been doing the entire year, this is, without a doubt, unequivocally the best offense in the National League. It competes with one of the best offenses in Major League Baseball. It was basically on top of the leaderboards for all the offensive categories a week ago in Major League Baseball. It's just a matter of time here. And I think, too, seeing Hayward continue to come through against tough lefties in high leverage situations, and we've seen Chili Davis and Madden talk about it, there's I think we've reached a point here, Corey, and I'll admit it, is if that Hayward, if he goes down again, that would be a massive disappointment, right? Now we're getting well over, what is it now, 2 weeks of Hayward performing well. So there's, personally, I want to see more of it, but I'm getting like a little bit more cautiously optimistic that what we're seeing is actually a successful adaptation. He's talking about his hands being a little bit more, I'm going to use the word that the players have been using, a little bit more whippy. So he has a little bit more like whipping action to his at-bats. I don't know, Corey. Like, I know they just lost a series against Milwaukee and got shut out in two straight games, but I'm still feeling really good about this.
Yeah, well, and I would draw, I wanted to draw attention to his at-bat in the fifth today, because I think that was a really good example. Yeah, it's just a walk, but it's an 8-pitch walk, and I think it is a good example of why a guy who has been so bad at the plate for the last few years, when he is going well, is given that opportunity, and Joe has basically just been like, he is the two-hitter since that has kind of turned. I think that at-bat in the fifth today was a really good example of why he's able to do that. Because, look, if he's hitting guys like Hader, okay, all bets are off. And if he's hitting high heat, like, he's doing a lot of good things that are kind of changing the perception of him that we've had for the last couple of years. But that at-bat in the fifth inning is not something that has changed. And even when he's been at his worst as a hitter, one thing that you can count on him for, he's got a good eye, he can foul off pitches, and he's, you know, not necessarily one to chase at horrible pitches all the time. And that was an 8-pitch walk. Again, that was not a good result for the Cubs in that inning. LaCella strikes out afterward, and then Rizzo grounds out. But it's just a solid at-bat. So, you know, even when he doesn't have hits today, he's still doing those little things that, combined with this sort of resurgence in his ability to make the type of contact that we haven't seen him making, it looks good. And again, you know,
I have a terrific stat for you once you finish up.
Just going to say that, you know, we still, you know, a few weeks or months of better peripherals and batted ball numbers, you know, doesn't necessarily erase those last couple of years. That was a long sample that, you know, you can't just throw away. But if he's always going to do those little things well. He's always going to give you good at bats. He's always going to have a good eye and make pretty good contact. And when you put it together with the rest of the stuff that we've seen from him, it's definitely promising. And I think especially if we're going to talk a little bit about the lack of offensive production, are we worried about this guy? Are we worried about this guy? You know, we'll continue to praise the work that Jason Hayward is doing as long as he keeps doing it. It's similar with Montgomery. You know, we don't want to beat a dead horse here all the time, but you know, these are guys who are sort of stepping up and elevating their spot on the team over the last month or so, and it's worth pointing out.
Yeah. This number blows me away, okay? So are you familiar with, like, the weighted run values for pitch types? Have you heard of those before? Okay. So for those who don't know, what Fangraphs has is how many runs a batter produces against a particular pitch, a fastball, a cutter, a sinker, etc. I'm looking at Hayward right now. Again, this is June 13th, so maybe it gets updated tomorrow. Probably won't because there's so many pitches here, but this is insane. His weighted four-seamer runs per just 100 chances right now is the best of his career. Best of his career right now. And he came in to the Cubs as being a fastball hitter, right? So, like, when he came over to the Cubs in St. Louis, he was well above average against fastballs. And in every year previously with the Braves, besides 2011, always above average. This year, his weighted runs for fastball, and it's kind of it's a weird way to put it, but he's basically, per 100 chances, he's creating two runs against fastballs. And then in his previous best year, it was 1.8 in 2013. Mm. So if we think Hayward is tangibly making a difference here, I think a good point is to go look at what he did in years past when he was successful, and he was successful because he was hitting fastballs. And we don't even need these, like, we don't even need these numbers to make the point. We saw the grand slam, high fastball, the hater, fastball. We've seen a lot of his power from fastballs this year. And another point, too, I want to point out, as much flack Madden takes, and, like, we've been the recipient of it, he put Hayward in this two-hole before Hayward really went off. I mean, he was having some good at-bats, had some good games, but he's been in the two-hole now for several games, and he's come through in clutch moments, in high-leverage moments, and his confidence is taking off. So there are some instances where line of construction is overrated based on just pure numbers, and there are some instances where you don't know if it makes sense. Only guys in the clubhouse know. Only maybe the manager knows. And I think for a situation like this, Madden deserves a lot of credit here for putting Hayward in that two-hole.
Yeah, Madden not afraid to move guys up, yeah, to try to get them going and to build that confidence. And, yeah, it's one of those things where obviously, you know, his unwavering confidence to a degree in Jason Hayward over the years is, I guess, paying off to a degree, right? Like, you'd sort of have to think that. You know, what it came at the cost of in the past is a moot point, is moot now.
1,200.
Yeah, it doesn't matter now, but it's like, you know, obviously continuing to believe in your guys, and we talk about the mental conditioning and that kind of coaching aspect of things a lot, and, you know, making sure that someone like Hayward throughout that time doesn't kind of spiral in on himself with all that was going on around him and just his general performance is definitely a credit to this coaching staff and Jason for being able to stick this thing out. But I want to read a quote from Bryant just as we kind of are still in this offensive what's going on type situation. And so there's some stats and then a couple of, I guess, lengthy quotes from Chris Bryant. But this article from Tony Andracki points out that Bryant hasn't homered since May 14th, slugging just .350 in that span, despite a .282 average and .357 on base percentage. He's also driven in just 8 runs and scored 9 in those 115 plate appearances. Bryant says, quote, "It's okay to slump as hitters. It's going to happen. This has been 16 at-bats. Sure, before that, I wasn't feeling great either, but I mean, I was hitting .300. If I'm complaining about that, then I got big problems. But like I said, this is where you learn the most about yourself and what drives you and what you're going to do. I still have my feelings in my gut before the game, and I know that they're there, which is a good thing because I want to go out there and do well. I think that's, you know, basically sums it up. And Joe Maddon follows by saying, quote, he's just been off his game. I'm certain he's going to be fine. There's some really good hitters this year that have gone through a little bit of a funk. It happens. I think that that kind of sums it up. I know that the numbers don't look great, and we all look to KB to be that rock in the middle of the order and just constantly putting up these insane numbers and continuing to grow as a player and doing the fantastic things that we've seen him do over the last few years. But these stretches are part of it. And I don't know that there's a more nuanced answer than that. I mean, Chris is someone who has certainly worked on his swing and changed his swing for
countless times.
throughout his career, and for the most part, for the better. You know, we've mentioned before that his K rate and his walk rates improve year to year. Well, you know, or at least don't like regress in any particular year. And, you know, his OPS numbers, his weighted on base average numbers, his overall WAR value, you know, these things are all very, very good. And he continues to make the adjustments to how he's pitched and where he's going on the field with the ball. These stretches happen. I think probably Mike Trout is the only person that this doesn't happen to, where you have these kind of sustained periods of, you know, what's going on with this guy. But KB is one of the best hitters in the league, and you just kind of have to stick through it and trust that he'll pull himself out of it. And yeah, I think the Rizzo example is a really good one. You know, these numbers can turn on a dime. Rizzo is an example
of
the positive turn. You can look at Baez for an example of the opposite, right? Like, these numbers can change on a dime, and I would think that, you know, especially by the time we get to the All-Star break, Chris Bryant's numbers will look exactly like we think they will. He'll probably be an All-Star, and, you know, we won't really be worrying about this. But I get the frustration, and, you know, it's something that has kind of been a hallmark of this team, especially the last couple of years, that, you know, despite looking good on the whole and the overall numbers lining up really well and usually, as you mentioned, near the top of the league, this is two series in a row now. You know, you go back to that series with the Pirates where the Cubs score three runs in a win, two runs in a win, and then one run in a loss. They get seven on Monday here against the Brewers, but obviously five of those coming in the 11th, and then zero for these last two games. So I understand the frustration, and I wish that there was a clearer answer, but I think that it's just you know, we've talked about this before. You've got a lot of young guys in this lineup, and sometimes when a couple of them are going, you know, really poorly at the same time, it's hard to overcome. But, you know, you look at this series, too, though, with the Brewers. The Brewers, a very talented offense, a lot of big names in that lineup. The run differential in this series, Brendan, is zero. So, you know, for as much as we're thinking about the Cubs, and again, five of those runs coming in one inning that perhaps, you know, without Hayward doesn't happen, or perhaps if Ryan Braun doesn't cut off that ball to the plate when Ben Zobrist is trying to score, perhaps they don't even get an opportunity to score those five runs. But they did score them, so you don't just erase those. But I just think worth pointing out that, you know, it's not like the Brewers were out there lighting up Cubs pitching, and, you know, this was not the top of the Cubs rotation. So, you know, I think just always good to kind of look around you and remember, like, I think that sometimes we get tunnel vision, and I do this too, where, you know, when the Cubs struggle.
Yeah, we all do.
When the Cubs struggle like this, you know, I think it's easy to think, like, you know, man, the Yankees never, you know, struggle like this. They score 10 runs a game. Like, they don't. You know, everybody does this. So, I think it's frustrating, and we're still really waiting. And even during that stretch of winning all those series, the offense wasn't necessarily performing at the level. That's why we kept saying that this team wasn't necessarily firing on all cylinders. So it's not necessarily just these last two series or just this series with Milwaukee. But when you look at what the Cubs are doing in terms of their ability to walk and the overall numbers from a lot of these guys, I'm encouraged about it. I think it gets sorted eventually and looks a little more consistent. But if – and I this is – I saw Ryan Davis, who we've had on the pod before, tweet this the other day that, you know, I know it's frustrating and it's fair to be, but – if a team had figured out the perfect formula for scoring like 4 to 6 runs a game, they'd win 140 games, you know? So Everybody's trying to do that, you know? And so I think we just kind of have to, it's a frustrating series, but you take one on the road at Milwaukee, you let the Brewers feel like they just won the World Series because they beat a team for the third time in 11 tries here against the Cubs. You know, they held serve in their own ballpark for the first time since what, last, like, ever. July? I mean, I don't even know. All I can think of is that series in Milwaukee last September, so it was certainly not before that. You know, I think that there's worse things in the world. This team has a lot of time to round into form. That's the benefit of not playing as poorly as they did to this point last year, is that, you know, you're not really staring up too much at the Milwaukee Brewers. Now you're a game and a half back after dropping this game today, but you're in a good spot. You've got the time to, we're playing well, we're not playing to our full potential, but you've got some time for that to really kick into gear.
Right, well, and the defense is playing well, too. I think during the times when you and I were kind of venting early on in late April, early May, they weren't playing well cleanly on defense.
Well, except for, I mean,
base running mistakes.
I think we need to get Tyler Chatwood some rundown experience maybe the next time they do PFPs. That was really bad, Brendan.
Well, I mean, that was bad. But when we talk about, like, defense,
yes, in general,
keys,
yes,
they,
absolutely.
They were happening at all cylinders, yes. Right? So that is cleaned up. And if you look at, like, all the defensive metrics, Len Casper is talking about it on the broadcast, I think in the first game of the series, maybe in the last series, but the Cubs are number one in the FanGraphs defensive run saved. That was this series, yeah. So, anyway, my memory's not the best right now. So, overall, like, that's cleaned up, and the base running has been still exceptional. Even in, gosh, Corey, what game is this? The first game with Ben Zobrist, right? He tags up. That was the first game. You know what I'm talking about? Okay, so those are the examples I'm talking about. They're making aggressive plays, or they're running the bases well, they're making good defensive plays. The offense is just going to be there, too. And, like, that's a good point, too, Corey. With Milwaukee, the Cubs shut them out five times this year, right?
Yeah.
That's insane, five times. So it's teams go through these stretches where they're just kind of not hitting here. And to see the Cubs come back in that first game was a huge, I think, kind of like a mental boost to get through someone like Hader. Corey Hader's like the best lefty in the game right now. Better than Andrew Miller at the current moment. Better than guys like Chapman. And he's the best. And I think I would be remiss if I didn't bring this quote up from Joe Maddon after that game, but it kind of points to where the Cubs are right now. And I'm going to give Maddon's quote here. This is not my own. Quote, "There are no tight butts. It's kind of interesting to listen to the conversation, even in a tight game. They're in the present tense, and that's all I can ask for." Quote. I love it. That is who the
Cubs
are.
Hashtag no tight butts.
That is who the Cubs have been. Hashtag no tight butts. That is who the Cubs are. That is what the mental skills program was in place to do. This is for a young team, and I always have to remind myself, whenever I get pissed off about this team, I get pissed off a little bit more frequently than I will lead on this. Whenever I get a little, maybe, I know. Whenever I get a little aggravated, I think about the average age of this team. And the fact is, they are the second youngest team in Major League Baseball. They're younger than Houston. They're younger than New York. And the only team older than them is the Atlanta Braves. They've won a World Series here, Corey. And all this one last point before you can transition over here, but the thing that I'm most interested in as this year goes on is how the offense continues to evolve, because we're seeing this progression where Chili Davis has kind of changed their approach to become a little bit more contact heavy, especially in two strike situations and in situations where there's men, let's say on second and third with less than two outs, and they're making more contact. Wilson Contreras is making more contact. He's making, like, league average contact. Schwarber, Corey, is making league average contact. These are guys, when they came up, were in the lower 15% in contact in Major League Baseball. They're at like league average. Insane. So now you can combine that with Chris Bryant and everyone. This is like almost a league average contact team. What is the next step for them? They've done that so quickly. What is the next step? Is it now barreling up on more pitches? Because if that's the case, it's game over for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the leaderboards right now. I mean, even the live leaderboard on Fangraphs, Cubs offense comes up first, ahead of the Yankees in terms of the overall value that they've provided. And the only difference, if you're looking really quickly at these things, is the power. So we know that there's guys on this team that have it from a raw perspective. And, you know, you need it to convert to that game value now, but you know, we know that they can do it. You know, I Wilson Contreras just missing a home run. I won't mention who caught it cause he doesn't deserve the credit, but, you know, that was, you know, and we've seen that a lot this year where it just seems like the Cubs have warning track power a bit too much. I don't, you know, really have the way to explain that, but it's tough to be too hard on this group when the overall numbers look the way that they do and they, you know, continue to take walks at the rate that they do.
Yeah.
I believe they lead the league in on base percentage. So, you know, you just have to sort of trust that it'll get rounded out. And I think that, you know, Chris Bryant is a good example of this, where sometimes it's hard for everything to click at once, right? You know, the first year that Chris Bryant is in the league in 2015, he puts up monster numbers, and everybody still talks about how much he strikes out, right? So what does he do? He lowers it every subsequent year. Well, now the power isn't there, so people are freaking out. And it's like, well, sometimes you can't have your cake and eat it too. We'd love the Cubs offense to take a bunch of walks, not strike out, hit a bunch of home runs. You know what I mean? Like, of course. But, you know, sometimes it takes time to sort of figure out that balance and get everything clicking at once. You know, they, looking at this right now, they rank as the best base running team in the league. They have the best on base percentage in the team. Yeah. They've created the most wins above replacement in terms of their offense. The power will come. We know it's there. It's not like you're looking at a bunch of guys who don't have, you know, that have, like, if you're, you know, from a scouting perspective, like, this isn't like a 20 raw power, game power lineup, right? We know the power is there. We've seen it. So how you get it out there, I don't know. I'm not paid to be a hitting coach in Major League Baseball, but it's there.
And you see my point, too? Like, yeah, like you know what I'm trying to say, too, is that this team is so young, and we've already seen this rapid shift in philosophy. Like, I'm not convinced that we're done seeing them continue to get better. That's the thing. You can look at teams like San Fran or older teams, even like Milwaukee. You can look at these teams like this is what you get. You look at their numbers. All these guys, their career numbers are basically identical. Not identical, but like within range year to year. These Cubs guys don't do that. Wilson changed a lot from last year. Chris Bryant changed a lot from 3 years ago. So they have this ability to change on the fly. And so I'm more curious and encouraged to see what this team looks like in August. Because I really do think come August, we're going to see some continued evolution of some of these guys. Like, what if Addison Russell starts to hit for more power? What if Contreras starts to hit for more power? And it's not crazy to think because they've done it in the years past. So now they can just tie in what they're learning from Chili Davis and the new coaching staff. I don't know. I didn't find myself giving this kind of podcast after getting shut out twice, but here I am, kind of, you know, being a little bit more encouraged here. Am I crazy here, Corey?
I don't think so. You know, and I mean, the other question too is that you look at this group, and it's the same question we always ask: what's the solution? Right? You've got a bunch of young guys who are out there that you're trying to get playing time. You know, we go through these issues all the time with guys like Schwarber, Happ, Almora, Hayward. You're getting really good value out of basically all of them. You know, I don't know if each individual guy is exactly where you'd like him to be. There's certainly lengths to improve. But where are you improving this team? You know, and I know that, you know, the thing that comes up is, well, we need another,
Manny Machado
or some big bat like that you would inject into the lineup. But where are you putting him? Who are you putting him in there for every day? And, you know, we talk, we really didn't want to get into this, but since we're on it, I guess why not? I'm just going to say that, you know, you look at the thing that comes up all the time, it still comes up, it's been coming up for months, is moving Russell for Machado. And the thing that I asked you in the beginning of, you know, when we were sort of getting on here today is, if you are one of the people who isn't like Brendan and I and doesn't particularly care for Addison Russell for one reason or another, why would the Orioles then want him? I never understand this when hypothetical trades are thrown out. Like, Cubs fans think, oh, I think we should move on from Russell. I don't believe the hype. He's not shown to be an above league average hitter, blah, blah, blah. Again, always considering the off the field stuff, but, you know, we're trying to look at this from a baseball perspective because we don't really know how that all factors in. But not to ignore it, I do want to mention it. But if you're looking at that going like, yeah, I don't believe in his bat, and I was concerned about his throwing issues last year, what makes you think the Orioles are giving up Manny Machado for this guy that you're ripping holes in this easily? It doesn't make any sense to me. So if you're looking at getting someone like Machado, who are you willing to give up for that, and how much of an upgrade are you getting? Because, like, I don't – like, you throw Manny Machado in this lineup. Does this Brewers series go better? Is Manny Machado going to pick up this offense? Or what if he's in a slump too? Right. So I just don't know that there's an easy answer to this when you don't have spots on this team that are occupied by guys who you're just willing to move out of a starting position or something like that. You know, do you want to get a middle infielder? And then is Baez not playing every day? Is Russell not playing every day? Like, what's the move here? Because most of these guys are in these positions because you want them there long term. You've got them under control. They're productive. They're good. You've won with them. It's not that easy to just sort of swap these pieces out, despite, you know, any concerns you may have with, you know, the sort of ebbs and flows of this offense and maybe how frequently the ebbs happen. Are the ebbs the bad one or are the flows the bad one?
I think the ebbs
okay,
are the
we'll
bad
go with
ones.
That.
Okay, that's not the question or not the answer right now. But I like what you're saying here, Corey, is like if you're against or if you're not a believer in Addison Russell, then by default, you have to, in your mind, accept that you need to give up more than Addison Russell to get Manny Machado, right? You can't. It's not a two-way street here. If you think Addison Russell is not good or not worth the hype, Baltimore is not going to think so, or not because of you. But you have to imagine that Baltimore is also considering the same factors, that Addison Russell is not what he's made out to be. So by default, you have to be willing to give up more than Addison Russell. And what more can the Cubs give up right now? Their farm system is naturally a little weaker, a little thinner right now because of all these graduations and some trades to get guys like Jose Quintana and Justin Wilson. It's a little bit thinner. It's going to get back to where it was in a few years. But it's a little bit more of a dream scenario right now to get Addison Russell. I mean, not to get on the topic here, but I just don't think it's going to happen.
Well, I think it's worth talking about because, you know, when you look again, it's like, you know, we're not trying to explain away the issues. Like, the team is not scoring. Their numbers over certain stretches of time are, like, not good in terms of how many runs they get across the plate, left on base numbers, runners in scoring position numbers. But I always just like to ask what the solution is. Like, you know, so like I think we're trying to sort of figure out what we can get out of this group and what we can really expect going forward. It's a lot easier to just say, you know what, let's add something great, right? Like, yeah, sure. But like, right. What is that? And what is the cost of it? And you know, what are those sort of opportunity costs that come along with it? Because I don't think that those answers are as easy as people or the media or, you know, these like hypothetical trade offers that you'll see randomly. I don't think it's as easy as that is made out to seem.
Right. I just, like I said, Corey, I just don't see it happening. One trend though, before we get into this upcoming Cardinals series, I want to point out is the bullpen. The bullpen has been phenomenal.
Continues to be.
And it's continues to be phenomenal. And it's coming when guys like Montgomery are going to the rotation and you're filling in spots. Randy Rosario has been incredible for what he did in that first game of the series, coming in extra innings, the ninth inning, going multiple innings, doing what he did. Incredible. In 12 innings, his ERA is 0.7, Corey, 0.7. In that little short time window, his contact rate is 73%. That's like 5% better than league average. He's 24. He throws heat. He's got the same release point as someone like Justin Wilson. Way over the top. Very unique. A wicked slider. I really liked Randy Rosario. He was, when the Cubs got him back in October, I wrote about this too. It's like, to find these types of relievers, you have to just get the naturally talented people and deal with their little tiny limitations and try to fix them and get them right. But this guy has incredible stuff, and we're seeing it translate. I don't know. I just wanted to point out, I feel like Randy Rosario is kind of going under the radar here, but for someone who really hasn't developed in previous teams, the Cubs seem to have gotten him and turned him into what could be an integral part of this bullpen going forward, if he continues to show this type of command, too. That's the thing. His command has been great both here up in on the major league level and in AAA and in the minors as well. So, Corey, big Randy Rosario fan. Love what he's doing.
Yeah, and I think that just the bullpen on the whole continues to be really strong. Again, I mentioned Justin Wilson with two strong outings in this series. His season ERA is now down to 2.20.
His overall season A is 2.20.
Yes. Justin Wilson. The Justin Wilson.
what a bizarre series.
Steve Cishek at 1.86, Pedro Strop 1.95, and they've been getting
the all-time holds leader. Did you see yes. that? Cubs tweet
oh,
that out?
Oh, and yeah. Brendan, we were going to forget. I should have led with this. We are recording this on Wednesday, June 13th. Happy birthday, Pedro Strop.
Happy birthday.
Hats to the left.
How old is he?
I do not know. He seems ageless, doesn't he?
Like what, like 32, I would imagine? I'm going to look this up as we're talking about
this. You know, they've also gotten some good contributions. It hasn't been perfect, but from those guys coming up and down from AAA, you know, you look at Luke Farrell, 33 for Pedro Strop. Almost his John Lester birthday. But,
not quite.
You know, you've been getting pretty good performances out of guys like Luke Farrell, Corey Mazzoni, Anthony Bass coming up in this series. And, you know, again, like, there's obviously been some hurdles there with those guys' performances. But for a group of guys coming up and down between AAA and, you know, just trying to help this team any way that they can and kind of give guys like Morrow and Strope and Cishek a break, especially while Edwards is out, like, they've done a really admirable job. And you know, for a team that is, I think, kind of derided for their pitching depth or organizational pitching development, this has been a good season in terms of the arms coming up and helping this team and being ready to do the job when it comes up. So I think that's something else worth mentioning as well.
Brandon Morrow has not pitched since June 7th. So, you know, fast forward to Friday, if he goes down Friday, that's 8 days off. Which is good to see. I got to admit, when the season was going along there in late May, I was kind of iffy about Brandon Morrow's usage. Not iffy in terms of like I think Madden's running them into the ground. Not that. I just wondered if he could hold up going on that pace. Because when he was pitching almost every other day in late May, he was on pace for like 70, 75 outings. And he only completed 42 innings last year. So, yes, just have the bullpen come up in a very clutch situation like the first game of the series against Milwaukee without Brandon Morrow to go multiple innings is really encouraging.
So, Brendan, since we're on the bullpen and we saw this today, so two of the answers you should be able to get right away. But we did see Joe Maddon pull his, you could call it a Joe Maddon trademark. I don't know how many other guys have even attempted it. But Joe likes to move a pitcher to left field when he brings in an opposite-handed pitcher so that he can swap them out and effectively not remove the one reliever from the game. We saw him do that today. He's done it five times in his time with the Cubs. Without giving you the two from today, those should be a gimme. Can you name the five that have played the outfield for Joe Maddon? Pitchers.
So five including the two today. Okay. Pedro Strop is three.
Do you need to name – I didn't name the two today, so you need to do that for the listeners.
Okay. Steve Cishek, three. Brian Dunson, four. And the fifth one –
it's hard.
The fifth one is going to be – hold on. Give me a second here. Can you give me a little bit more of a hint if it's going to be difficult?
His last name is the title of a famous war movie.
You're putting me on the spot here. Last name is a title of a famous war movie.
And general.
What is this? I honestly don't know.
Who Spencer is Patton.
Yeah, see, I would have never gotten that
I didn't
one.
Think
what,
so.
Like, what was that, last year, early on?
I don't remember, honestly. You had been the one asking the question to me, I certainly would not. I would have gotten the other four, but I would not have gotten that one.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, so let me preview this series here against the Cardinals. So the first game, by the way, this is a great matchup overall this entire series. But the first game is going to be on Friday. We have your boy, John Lester, on the mound facing Michael Wacha. Lester is 7-2, 2.22 ERA. Michael Wacha, 8-1, 2.47 ERA. It's having a great year. That game starts at 7:15 p.m. Central Time. Then on Saturday, we have Kyle Hendricks going on the mound, 4-6, 3.48 ERA. He'll face Carlos Martinez, 3-3, 2.50 ERA. Martinez has had injuries about a month ago. He's coming back. I believe this will be his third start back. So maybe the Cardinals are still trying to ease him into a role. We'll see. And then Sunday, the Cardinals have not announced a starter, but for the Cubs, it will be Jose Quintana, who's 6-4, 4.09 ERA. Quintana is so close to like looking like his old self. So I keep saying this, but like that's probably going to be the trend of the series again for me, or looking forward to the next series for me, just to see Q get back on track here. So that would be it. The Cardinals are 36-29. They are, what is that? I can't do math right now, but they're a few games back of the Cubs. This is an important series. It's the same thing with the Brewers, right? These are the series that you want to go in. You want to win. The intensity is a little bit higher than other series. But overall, I think getting the pitching staff continuing to play well. Hopefully the offense gets matched up with it. Hopefully KB comes back stronger. It will be a fun series.
Yeah, so getting word here on the news wire that Jose Martinez is having a baby, and he will not play in this series. So that is it's a win-win, I think, for everybody except for the Cardinals. It's a win for us because Jose Martinez has a 390 WOBA on the season and a 151 weighted runs created plus. So that's very good with 10 home runs. And it's good for Jose Martinez because he's having a baby. So I think anytime you can get a win-win loss with the loss coming for the organization of the Cardinals, you know, hey, what better way to go into an off day, right, before a three-game set? But, yeah, man, I mean, they got to score more runs. That's it. You know, I think that it is one of those things where you want to point out the good things that the offense is doing and that they're rating well in certain categories, but obviously it's got to translate into runs on the field at some point. So you've got another divisional contender. The Cardinals play the Padres tonight at home. So they will enter that game 3.5 back of the Brewers, 2 back of the Cubs. So it'll either be 1.5 or 2.5 heading into that series on Friday, assuming the Cardinals don't play tomorrow, which they do not. Okay, great. It's always convenient when that works out because you got to look that stuff up beforehand. But, yeah, I mean, you know, look.
Can I give one more quote before we sign off? I'm just laughing at this. This is, like, from 2 minutes ago.
But it's Steve Cech, yeah. Left yeah.
Today. Yeah, you saw that.
I did.
This is great. I think you're going to get a laugh. The listeners will get a laugh when they see this. Quote, "I don't know who gave me those sunglasses, but they were prescription lenses or something. That made me nervous. It was tough to see out there," end quote. I'm just imagining Steve Cech in left field, not playing there, probably in God knows how long, with like Kyle Schwarber's prescription sunglasses with the sun in his face. I don't know. Something about that just makes me incredibly, it makes it incredibly funny.
I didn't know how I felt about that quote. I kind of would like to not have known that, but yeah.
Watch him make a diving catch.
Yeah, I know. The ball didn't find him. It did find Wilson in that eighth inning, I think it was, when he eventually came in to sub them out after the pitch changing had been done. And, of course, it found him right away, and not an easy catch. So I'm always impressed when those guys can hop out there, guys that aren't naturally playing that position. But, yeah, they got to score runs. I mean, that's just what it is. And, you know, you're looking for Bryant to get back on track and just, you know, start to hit better in general. Guys like Baez, you know, you'd really like to see. Baez is an interesting case because he's really reverted back to a lot of those bad habits and is having, you know, it's almost like he's making up for how few of those sort of predetermined outcome at bats he had at the beginning of the year. It's like almost as if he's trying to like rapidly make up for them during this stretch. But really, yeah, like a different player. So it'll be interesting going forward to see how Joe manages stuff like that. You know, as Ben Zobrist continues to play pretty well and, you know, kind of consistent trademark Ben Zobrist, you know, and Russell, we're, you know, still sort of monitoring that and waiting for him to kind of click on offense. So an interesting situation there. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty simple. I think they just got to score runs, Brendan.
That's it for me. And I think it's only a matter of time until everything starts clicking offensively. I wouldn't even be surprised if it happens this upcoming series with Chris Bryant getting a few days off here and just, you know, him being Chris Bryant. It's going to happen here, Corey.
I am for that. So that'll do it, I think, for us. Have a lovely off day. Give yourselves, like we will, a little rest from worrying about the Cubs offense, I guess, is where we're probably all at here. So that'll be nice, I guess, on Thursday, and then hopefully take it to the Cardinals on Friday. But this has been the Cubs Related Podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. You can find us on Google Play, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, posted on CubsInsider.com. Most episodes, if we're not on a platform that you absolutely must have us on to make your life easier, just let us know and we'll do what we can. We always appreciate feedback, questions, etc. If you would be so kind as to go into iTunes, their rating and review section, and leave us a 5-star review and a comment, it helps us get seen a little bit more, which is nice. But other than that, again, enjoy your off day. Hopefully the Cubs rest up and take it to the Cardinals this weekend. We will talk to you after Sunday night's game. We thank you for listening, and go Cubs.